playwright Oliver Mayer is here to talk about his new play, Yerma in the Desert, and give us his spin on our LGBTQ issues. Hi, Oliver.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
Doing great.
Tell us about your new play.
Well, I'm really excited about it. Originally, the great Federico Garcia Lorca wrote a play called Yerma in the 1930s, which was one of his three great Spanish plays. I never forgot it when I saw it. And I've been thinking about the way that he dealt with women on stage, which I think is really, really special. So I went back and I took some of the ideas of the original play and brought them to the present day. And I decided, because it was now mine, to change the title. A great playwright named Milo Cruz recently did a version of Anna Karenina and brought it to Cuban people in Tampa. And he called his play Anna in the Tropics. So I thought, well, I'm going to call my play Yerma in the Desert. And so that was the idea. And I just really, really became fascinated with women's plight in the play and how I could bring it to the present day. So that's the main reason that I got involved. I also got commissioned to write it because I've been working with a company locally here in Los Angeles called Urban Theater Movement. They're the most diverse company in town, and many, many ways of defining diversity there. They really look like our city, and they come from areas of our city that we don't expect actors to come from. They're not from Hollywood. They're from the East and the South Side, and they just seemed perfect for this retelling of the Lorca tale. So those are the reasons why I decided to go for it.
What was your inspiration for writing it?
I think all these years here in Los Angeles, I've been writing plays, and I've been really fascinated to try to capture, I think, the drama that people go through every day. I happen to have an office where I work at University of Southern California that's right next to an office where the person in charge of custodial works, and so I have a lot of custodians in the area, and I've gotten to know them very well, wonderful people, and I hear them speak. And so when they talk to one another, and when I get a little bit of their gossip, I get a little bit of their drama, it's affected me over time. My wife as well, both of us have befriended a lot of the people who've come and gone, and I found out that that was a community that really reflected in a lot of ways what's going on in my university, in my city, in the country, and it's about gender, and it's about income inequality, it's about sexual identity, it's just quite simply about race, and I found it really fascinating. So I thought that this story that I loved would fit really intriguingly in the mouths of particularly the women who are the custodians in a job very similar to what I have witnessed. So that was my big inspiration, and then I just really wanted to deal with being a playwright now in the 2017, and I feel like you got to take a stand. So I know Lorca did. We could talk about how he did, and so I thought I'd get inspiration from him and really try to do my darndest to tell these stories.
What do you hope to accomplish with your work?
That's always, you know, a big question in my life. It's hard. What do I accomplish with a play? You know, there have been a few plays historically where, you know, Clifford Odets wrote a play, Waiting for Lefty, and, you know, his character said strike on stage, and then everybody ran out in the Union Square and started to strike. It hasn't happened very often since then. A few times we've been able to sort of directly excite an audience, agitate, or maybe put our finger on something or touch a third rail to make people do stuff. I'm more interested really in trying to kind of maybe open people's hearts and maybe open their minds to what I consider more and more a kind of a invisible population, which is often, you know, in people who do kind of what we would consider menial work. But in this case, I'm sure really know us. It occurred to me while I was writing that probably no one knows me as well as my family is people who clean up for me. And I'm really glad that they don't talk a lot about it because they see my letters and what I really eat and the mess that I leave. And so not my best self is, I guess, what I'm saying. And we have an agreement not to talk about it. So I think what I'm trying to accomplish maybe by telling the stories of Yerma and the other women that I've characterized is to be aware of them as people, as dimensional people, as even educated people who've come from all different directions of the globe. And that actually, that's a pretty interesting job, too. I mean, I think you can be really, really good at it. I know some people who are really, really good at what they do. And yet we don't think about that, certainly we don't think about it as an art form, and maybe not even consider it to be the best kind of employment. But I guess I'm trying to open people's hearts to jobs like this and to people who do those jobs so that they actually see them and pay them their just respect and dimensionalize them. So that was probably the biggest thing I could say. Other than that, certainly I'm interested in the way that these women treat each other. That's where their sexuality really comes out. Their behavior that's both taught and then what's really going on comes to surface. And so I hope that the play accomplishes, allows an audience to see that we have masks that we all expect each other to give us. When I say, hi, how you doing? You say, I'm doing fine, whether you are or not. I want to get past that mask, and I want people to know that it's worth getting past that mask.
What is your personal commitment to LGBTQ civil rights?
Well, I'm an ally, and I've been a writer now since I was 19, and I'm 52. And I would say a good amount, over half of my plays, will tackle issues of sexuality, sexual behavior. And I often will begin with a sort of cisgender reality that historically, you know, kind of rules the land. And then I will try to get into the individuated reality of my lead characters. And I tend to think of sexuality as something extremely fluid and maybe as something as particular as your signature and maybe something, you know, that you're born with that belongs to you like your own thumbprint. So my commitment to LGBT is to try to be true to that individuation. I don't like to write characters who just fit into boxes and categories. The play that I'm probably most known for, Blade to the Heat, involves a boxer, a young man, who people say that he's gay, and this is in the 1950s and early 60s when he's fighting, and so that's a tremendous smear in the world that he lives in. He's also Latino, and I have a second play. I spend two plays trying to find his individual sexuality, which falls in a lot of areas. It's not as easily pronounced, although we have a lot of new ways to speak about this and ways that we didn't have 20 years ago. It's still his. It still belongs to him. So my commitment to LGBTQ work is to try to be true to an individual experience and try not to judge it too quickly. So most of my characters who fall under an LGBTQ derivation are really trying to find their own way. By the way, my cisgender characters hopefully are doing that too. I'm just trying to be as sensitive and as open to a sexual experience as I can be with my characters on stage.
How do you see our LGBTQ community moving forward in this Trump administration?
Well, that's a good question. I think it's a good news, bad news situation. I do think that Trump, by being a celebrity, in quotes, a creature of Hollywood, is very likely, I don't think he bears any animus in particular to the LGBTQ community that he's met or dealt with in his business. I really do think he sees green. And so I think at least there's no animus like there might be from a President Pence. That scares me. So I think the good news about Trump is he's not some kind of really, really scary figure. I feel that he's a puppet, and I feel that he can be maneuvered any which way. So I'm really afraid of the people that are on either side of him. So the bad news is that they will move him. I think none of them can, but they will, in ways that are going to be really distasteful to any of us who feel that we've made any strides in the last 15 years, that we're going to have to fight for everything all over again. So I really do think that LGBT community members really have to get together now and prepare for the worst, maybe hope for better than that, but prepare for the worst, prepare for fights, prepare for trials and demonstrations. I am afraid that the next few years are going to be rife with struggling for things that we thought we had already gained.
With LGBTQ teens 34 times more likely to attempt suicide than their heterosexual peers after facing bullying incidents, what advice would you have for these kids struggling with Trump's administration?
My advice is to keep fighting because hopefully within 3.5 years or less, we'll have a change. Again, it could be not the change that we want, but I know that it won't always be like this. And what I know particularly about teenagers, LGBTQ or otherwise, and even preteens, is that whatever they're feeling in the moment, they feel 1,000%. I remember being that teenager myself. So the experience of going through feeling as if you're under the microscope, feeling attacked, feeling that less than, feeling bullied, and feeling bullied even on TV by someone that we thought we could trust is really, really scary. So I'm really, really sorry that young people have to go through this, but they need to know that it can change, it will change. It has everything to do, though, with them wanting it to change. I'm firmly of the belief that if enough of us keep wanting and fighting and demanding for better treatment, that we'll get it. It'll take a while, but we will get it. I also do really feel that even this particular president can be swayed, and he can certainly be swayed by real stories, real hurt, and so I'm really hopeful that people don't feel too beaten down. And that goes, I think, for parents as well, because I think young people really do catch our vibe. We have to really be careful. This is a time where a lot of us feel bruised, and a lot of us feel under attack, and we can't let it get the better of us.
How can people get information about your work?
I have a website, olivermayer.com. This particular play that's coming up, Yerma in the Desert, you can find out information on it at the theater that we're doing it at, which is Greenway Court Theater. The website is www.greenwaycourttheatre.org/Yerma. And you can find out more information about the play, which is really exciting. The other way you can find out about me is through my day gig, which is as a professor at the School of Dramatic Arts at the University of Southern California. I'm very reachable, particularly through their website, and I've been very active in teaching dramatic writing, and maybe listeners might be interested in that as well. We have a fantastic Master's in Fine Arts, and we have a really good undergraduate degree as well.
What other projects are you working on?
This spring, I'm going to be producing Members Only, which is the sequel to Blade to the Heat. Blade to the Heat ended in the very early 1960s. With a tragedy in the boxing ring that was forced by bullying, that was forced by people who were gay bashing and afraid, and my lead character, who's a fighter, ends up in a tragedy in the actual fights. And so 20 years have passed in my life as well as in the lives of my characters, but I've brought them back, and now we're in the early 1980s, 1982 actually, in New York City, in this new play, Members Only, which we're doing at LA Theater Center. So I'm trying to really conjure the early 80s through the music, through the dance clubs, in this case Xenon's in New York, through the fighting boxing gyms, which I happen to know as a young person, I was a boxer, and this kind of what was the golden age of fights. And this character who I've created, who maybe is an amalgam of some other fighters, but in my case, is someone who's living, I think, the life of a homosexual man in the early 80s who's at a championship level, whether or not he's a champion at this point. And so I'm trying to be true to that experience. And I'm also looking at the next generation of people trying to break into this sport and make it theirs. And what I realized in writing it is that the next generation is women, that now we have female fighters, we have female MMA fighters. In the 1980s, it was just beginning to happen, and there was no structure around it. And individuals were really on their own, and it was really hard. And I'm writing about a young person trying to start her career in the surroundings where people put her down, and again, all kinds of bullying and bashing is possible. And my lead character sees her and realizes that that was him 20 years ago. So the union of these two people is kind of the basis for what happens at the play. And I'm really, really excited to show this to to a Los Angeles community, particularly one that really supported my play 20 years ago. Blade to the Heat originally was at the Public Theater. George Wolfe directed it, and it came to Los Angeles and played the main stage at the Marte Perform. And it still is one of the sort of great memorable productions of the 1990s. So I'm hoping that we can get lightning in a bottle and really show this town some exciting theater about really important subjects. So that's coming up. That'll be March 22nd at LA Theater Center.
Is there a question you wish people would ask you?
I guess we could talk about the situation that we're in now as a nation around sexual harassment in the workplace, particularly in dramatic arts, in film and other places in Hollywood. So here I am in L.A. and seeing this all unfold. My wife is, besides being really a working actress in television, film, and theater, well, I'm not the only person to think she's quite a beautiful woman. And she knows she's been through a lot of this in and out of the business. But I had to tell her I've been there too. I remember as a young person, particularly breaking in with a new play, Blade to the Heat, finding myself in situations where I had a choice, and it wasn't an easy one, because I so wanted to be part of what I considered to be the happening theater scene, and I wondered if I had to do things I didn't want to do. Now, I'm lucky. I wasn't forced to do anything, and maybe also I was hopefully smart enough to get out of a situation that I couldn't escape, but I remember well, within the last 25 years, feeling fairly cornered, feeling as if I were being manipulated. So I have a lot of sympathy for the people who are making their complaints, but I do think that everyone needs to think also about trying to protect themselves. We have so much desire to want to, I don't know, be famous, be successful, do great things, get in front of the camera. I don't really want to get in front of the camera, but a lot of people do. And hopefully that gets tempered or balanced with a sense of protecting oneself. And that is something I learned probably even before when I was a young person as a boxer, is you have to learn the defense before you learn your offense. So I guess my point is I have tremendous sympathy for what's going on and feel as if I've been there. But I really hope people protect themselves, because I don't think this is going away, even with a Harvey Weinstein going down or his brother or you name any person who is capable of this. This will still happen. It's never going to go away.
Do you have a favorite quote or mantra to get you through the difficult times?
One stands out more than any other. It's helped me so often over the years, and I love to say it to people. I'm a big fan of E.E. Cummings, the poet, and in a very early introduction to one of his beautiful books of poetry, he says the following line: "Always the beautiful answer who asks the more beautiful question." It means it starts with me. My question is going to provide, hopefully, the answer, the hope, the beauty, the opportunity that I'm looking for. And it's also the gesture that if I'm doing that, I think other people can do it too. It's the way that I try to address my own work, and particularly the work of the playwright, is not necessarily about finding answers, but about bringing up the big questions that make audiences think about it even after the show is over. So it's certainly words I've lived by.